Hello and welcome to World Business Report on the BBC World Service. I'm Will Bain. America has decided, and over the next half hour on this edition of the programme, we'll bring you what the return of President Trump means for America's economy and the world's economy.
Your paychecks will be higher, your streets will be safer and cleaner, your communities will be richer, and your future will be brighter than ever before. This will be the golden age of America.
The now president-elect Trump there, bullish in the early hours of this morning in Florida, promising tax cuts for big businesses, to roll back the state and regulations, and to impose tariffs on imports from other countries. Does that mean a golden age, as he says, or a dark one for international trade? We'll be hearing from supporters, small businesses across the United States, and we'll also be hearing a little bit later on in the programme global perspectives from Europe and Asia about what all of this means now. Joining us live from Wall Street, the centre of the financial district in New York City in the United States, is our North America business correspondent, Ritika Gupta. Ritika, great to have you with us. Thanks for being with us.
Yes, great to be here. I mean, you're seeing stocks rallying here on Wall Street.
Yeah, been a wild day on the markets. Talk us through the US ones first of all then.
Yes, the stocks, a big rally here, a decisive outcome. And Trump's victory very much means that the Trump trade is back on. So you're seeing the dollar at the strongest levels we've seen in years. Bitcoin hitting fresh highs. Treasuries lower. Small caps, the small cap stocks, they're more sensitive to a Republican victory. Those also rallying today. And we've got other winners. You're seeing the bank stocks up. This is on this idea that Trump would bring more deregulation, lower capital requirements. So some clear winners.
Yeah. And run us through some of those kind of key economic areas, I guess, that those companies and those shares and the wider kind of markets are reacting to, Ritika.
Well, a big element, of course, is the corporation tax. We know that Trump wants to lower that to 15%. So obviously lower taxes that can boost profit. So that is, you know, seen as positive for stocks and also for the broader market. But there is a big question of whether this does indeed get enacted. We have to remember that it will also be shaped by Congress. And we're still waiting on the decision of the House and whether that will be flipped or not. So it's still not 100% certain yet. I think that's worth keeping in mind. But that is one element of it. And then also looser financial regulations that he's promised. He's promised supporting fossil fuel producers. So there's lots of different winners and losers in this.
Alongside Ritika with me, Russ Mould, regular on the programme from the investment firm AJ Bell here in the UK. Russ in the studio with me. If that's the side, the sort of positive, a lot of US market rallies today, Russ. On the flip, a lot going on in Europe and around the world as well.
And some European stocks are responding favourably. They're looking at higher defence spending. So that's British Aero, so that's BAE Systems and Leonardo of Italy, for example. Companies with big local operations in America that could benefit from construction spending and onshoring, like Ashtead. So big winners there. The biggest losers in Europe are those who are seen as global trade players, the shipping firms like A.P. Møller-Mærsk of Denmark and Hapag-Lloyd of Germany, and the green and renewable companies, Ørsted, Vestas Wind Systems, and industrials like German automobile manufacturers. Again, there's that worry, proven or otherwise, that tariffs are coming on them.
Yeah, Ritika, those wind farm makers like Ørsted that Russ mentioned, they were really big fallers on markets here in Europe today. Is that, and that's not really as much about what the president might do, right, as well, more about what he might not do in terms of changing regulations or rowing back on regulations for the fossil fuel industry.
Yeah, so he may actually, you know, get rid of the previous support that this current the current administration had put in place for supporting fossil fuels in that Inflation Reduction Act. And so that's the concern, really, that, you know, he's going to support fossil fuel producers and those renewable energy companies, the beneficiaries that they got from that Inflation Reduction Act would be overturned.
Yeah, you've been out there all day. I know on days like this, you end up standing outside in all weathers, Ritika, for plenty of time out there. Have you got a sense of kind of mood in the kind of financial capital of the US?
Well, I mean, as you can see, the stock market's reaction, at least for the markets, they're taking a decisive outcome in its stride. And I think you've also got to remember that they weren't expecting that we would get a result so quickly. So we were expecting that we would see more volatility. So there's, on the one hand, a Donald Trump victory and what that might mean for markets. But I think it's also having a firm decision and kind of reducing some of that volatility that's also built it up. And even the polls as we went into this started to show a really neck and neck race. So that's what I think what's driving some of the sentiment today. But again, as I mentioned, we're very much going to have to wait to see how Congress is shaped. It looks like the Republican Senate, but what will the House be? And that's another question that we'll have to wait and see.
Yeah, really interesting. Those are kind of the question marks ahead, aren't they? Ritika, thanks so much for your time. Ritika Gupta there, our North America business correspondent, live from Wall Street in New York City. Well, some of that that Ritika was talking about there is what I put to Thomas Phillipson. Thomas was the acting chairman of the Council of Economic Advisers in the first President Trump administration. He's now a professor at the University of Chicago's Harris School of Public Policy. Started, though, by asking him about, well, just what he'd made of the night overall.
Obviously, the Senate is going to go Republican as well, which means his nominations will probably be easily approved. On top of it, a lot of people are optimistic that the House is going to go Republican as well, in which case his spending and tax agenda will have a very large chance of passing.
Have you spoken to him yet?
No, I haven't spoken. There's been a lot of flurry on the campaign. I've spoken to some people in the campaign.
As you say, been overwhelming. Can you boil it down to why in economic terms, do you think?
Well, I think the record is pretty clear. Europeans, I talk a lot to European press, and they are baffled why Americans are voting for Trump. I think, you know, that's part of the media bias, because that a lot of negative information gets put out in Europe. You don't have a lot of coverage of the opposing view. I think that's kind of why people are baffled when they ask, like, how could this happen?
Well, no, and explain out the other side for us from an economic point of view. What do you see as that record?
Yeah, no, I mean, the record is clear. When he was in power in his first term, workers gained enormously in terms of their real income. There was low interest rate and there was no inflation. And under the Biden term, workers are falling behind. Inflation is eating up more than their pay increases. And it's just been an economic disaster for the middle class, not for the rich. The rich has done very well under Biden because asset values have kept up with inflation, such as equity markets and housing markets, essentially. So there's a big divide where the middle class and the lower part of the income distribution have been falling behind. And that's what you saw in the election results.
One of the key areas we know already is going to be around tariffs. A lot of economists, a lot of your colleagues in that sector think that will disproportionately impact exactly the type of people you're talking about, make things more expensive for everyday Americans.
A lot of times Trump, when we were in the White House, a lot of times he used tariffs as a threat. For example, he threatened wine tariffs on France to get rid of the digital taxes that they were imposing on our big tech companies. That never got executed. He threatened Mexican tariffs that never got executed, but he got his way with Mexico because of it. So many times they're used as threats. And the real reason is because there's not reciprocity. If you look at how much Europe taxes U.S. companies, it's higher than what U.S. does to European companies. So the real goal here is reciprocity, that if other countries are willing to lower their tariffs, we could do it too, except for China, obviously, where there's a military issue. Most importantly, tariffs are taxes. Everyone agrees on that. But he's replacing domestic taxes with tariffs. And domestic taxes are bad, too. And people don't mention that. And he's trying to reduce domestic taxes and replace them with tariffs for a lot of circumstances.
I absolutely want to come to that. Just on the tariff, though, in the short term, making that transition, when you're trying to reboot the economy in that way, it is going to have short, perhaps even medium-term pain for people.
It might be pushed on to price increases, but the funny thing is that his critics argue, oh, look, you impose taxes on foreign companies, that might be pushed on as price increases. And then in the next sentence, they say, well, he's helping billionaires by lowering corporate taxes. Okay, those two things are inconsistent. All taxes on companies are pushed on to other people, whether it's workers or consumers or shareholders, essentially.
Let's talk taxes. The debt been a huge issue, been raised by a number of the Republicans over the last few years. Wouldn't tax cuts potentially just fuel that issue around the deficit? And is that prudent management of the economy?
There's a big difference between the Trump deficits and the Biden deficits. Trump deficits occur because he's trying to shrink government, and Biden deficits occur because he's trying to expand government, expand spending more than he's raising taxes.
Well, so investing for growth would be their argument, right? To try and create jobs, things like the Inflation Reduction Act. That was kind of
most of it is redistribution.
You're sanguine about the debt.
I mean, the debt, it has to be addressed. Clearly, it has to be addressed. We have 7% of the GDP spent on it being the deficit currently. In order to fix that, we obviously have to expand supply, and that's what the tax cuts are for. But also, we have to cut spending in the future, that's for sure.
The Committee for Responsible Federal Budget, not sure if you've seen this number, say that all of this together, what we've been talking about, the tax cuts, tariff hikes, could add as much as $7.7 trillion over the next 10 years to that baseline. That would be huge amounts of cuts that were needed to balance that.
I think it's clear that most of spending is caught up in entitlement programs, Medicare and Social Security, which is a very difficult thing to cut. Both parties have said they won't touch it, essentially. That, I think, is the crux of the spending problem. I mean, the real issue is spending, because whenever you spend, you have to tax people some way. You can either tax them now, you can tax them in the future by borrowing. So the real issue is really to bring spending down, but also to bring revenues up through economic growth. Mm. We need the extra growth to generate the revenue to get rid of these deficits.
Can you do that with having the type of commitments that the soon-to-be president again has on immigration in terms of access to the sheer numbers in the workforce that certain sectors of the economy need? And two, if they can't, the expense that those workers cost if they have to go and try and compete for them?
Well, what the press misses, I think, on purpose is that Trump is for legal immigration. He's against illegal immigration. And that's obviously gets blurred over because they want to paint him in a bad picture.
But we found that here in the UK, for example, as well, haven't we? It becomes very blurred, doesn't it? It becomes very difficult to take down that headline number, which is what a lot of people will have voted on if you are not also trying to cut back on some of the legal migration too, right?
It depends on how you do it. I mean, there's a lot of discussion here of deportation and then increasing immigration and legal immigration in response to. They're also reacting to spending tax dollars on illegal immigrants. They are not reacting to spending tax dollars on legal immigrants.
Wouldn't deporting 20 million people cost a heck of a lot of money, though, as well?
It will cost money for sure, but I think it's peanuts relative to the payments on healthcare and schooling, etc., that is taking place on people that have broken the law here.
President Trump talked a lot about Elon Musk coming in and stripping back regulation. What kind of things do you think would make sense? What types of regulation have been a hamper on that growth that you've been talking about? What would kind of be things that would be top of your list to kind of trim?
Obviously, the energy sector is going to be first in line in terms of deregulation with all the regulations that are being put on U.S. energy, which I think actually hurts global warming as opposed to help it, because U.S. energy is so much cleaner than the rest of the world when the rest of the world substitute for that U.S. energy. The only reason we don't have green energy adopted, 80% of energy is fossil fuel still, is because it's more expensive. Innovation needs to bring that down below brown energy. And in our current regulatory environment, that's very, very difficult to do. Shale is one example of that, where you're doing better.
You'd like to see more of that, more fracking licenses.
Yeah, exactly.
Look ahead for us. Heard the president in the early hours of this morning, our time, extremely bullish, talking about this golden age for the U.S. economy. Are you excited? As someone who's worked with him, been in the room, been in those things, do you see that? Do you see that vision, and how quickly?
I think if he gets his fiscal agenda with tax cuts in place, it will be an enormous stimulus for the business sector. And obviously, the only way to help workers, which is pretty much the ultimate goal, is to help the business sector start being interested in paying a lot more for workers. So I think there's a view in the Democratic Party that there's a zero-sum game between workers and corporations, when the exact opposite is true. The reason we have such high wage growth for workers in the first presidential term was because we made the environment business friendly and therefore started having a lot of bidding for workers. I think that's going to continue in the new presidency by multiple of levels of policies that he's going to institute.
You excited?
Absolutely. I mean, everyone is very joyful here.
Professor Thomas Phillipson there, former economic advisor to President Trump in his first presidency. And you can tell a lot of people wanted to get in touch with the professor there. You could hear his laptop beeping away, perhaps, in the background there. Russ Mould from AJ Bell. We talked at the top with Ritika Gupta about the reaction from companies and their share prices, for example, on stock markets around the world. Something else we've seen today is the cost of US borrowing, perhaps reacting to what we were talking about at the end there with Professor Phillipson.
If you're looking for a little bit of scepticism or doubt, then it's from the bond markets or bond vigilantes who are currently driving up the US headline cost of government borrowing. When the Federal Reserve cut interest rates by 0.5%, the Federal Reserve cut interest rates by 0.5 percentage point on the 18th of September. That would normally take bond yields down in sympathy. They're up 0.75 percentage point since then. So that's the bond market's worrying about more borrowing, more supply of treasuries. And yes, they'll sell those treasuries. It's a matter of what price and at what yield you can do it. And that means probably a high yield. But that then ripples through to higher borrowing costs, higher credit card costs, higher mortgage costs. And that's why the house building shares are down today, for example.
Really interesting. The market a little bit less sanguine than perhaps the professor was there. Both the professor and Russ talking about there with the high cost of living been one of probably the key issue right throughout the election, wasn't it? The BBC's American business reporter Ben Derica has been speaking to some young people in Las Vegas, Nevada, this morning about that issue.
Can you tell me your name?
Sabrina.
And Sabrina, are you from Nevada?
I am, born and raised. I've never been into politics so much because I didn't understand it. I want to know about how we're going to get ahead in life and how we're going to get out of this rut that we've been in as far as inflation. The economy has been horrible. I'm looking for someone, which is, in my opinion, Donald Trump, that actually is going to change and tell it like it is. You know, I feel as though it's going to be a happier place because people are going to be not struggling as much anymore.
Can you tell me your name?
Jason.
Jason, are you from Nevada?
I am from Phoenix, Arizona.
Can you tell me who you voted for and what drove you out?
I voted for Donald Trump, dude. The last 4 years, we've had Biden and Harris in there, and it's been some of the 4 years of the worst times I've experienced living in my life. What? Like, as far as the economy goes, as far as the price of everything, everything. When Trump was president, I may not have agreed with everything that he said, but the economy was amazing. And I know, and I firmly believe, and I think that everybody is going to be well better off with Trump in that presidency.
Can you just tell me your name?
AJ.
AJ?
Yep.
So you said you didn't go out and vote today. Were you thinking you were going to vote at any point?
I feel like it was a lose-lose, so that's why I didn't vote. Like,
have you voted before?
No.
Do you mind me asking how old you are?
21.
21. Okay, so this would have been your first presidential election.
Yep. Would have been. But like I said, I didn't see no point in voting for either one of them, so...
Ben Derica, our reporter in Las Vegas, Nevada there, giving us a real sense of the work still ahead on the economy for President-elect Trump. Tracy Tappany is the co-owner of Wyoming Machine, a metals manufacturing organization based in the state of Minnesota. Tracy's also the vice chair of the U.S. Chamber of Commerce, a small business council. Tracy, welcome to World Business Report. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you for having me.
How much of what those voters were saying kind of rings true, I guess, for everybody around you? Do you think the entree economically for President Trump is pretty significant here?
You know, I think that what I have heard from many people that work for me is that our economy has been a huge issue. And I think exit polls yesterday really bore that out, that people are very concerned and don't feel that they're better off than they were 4 years ago.
And do you think that drove people's decision? Because you didn't vote for President Trump, right?
You know, what I will say about that is I am a woman who leads a manufacturing company. I've been doing that for the last 30 years. I am also a mother of two daughters. And so I wear many hats, I think, and I'm a multifaceted person. So for me, electing a woman or supporting leadership of women in all aspects of society is incredibly important to me. And I would have liked to have seen a woman be able to rise to that highest level in the federal government.
Talked a lot about growth through the program, Tracy. What would help stimulate that? What would help you grow your business?
Well, I think that one of the things that we're going to be concerned about coming into the new year is the pro-growth tax provisions from 2017. Many of those are set to expire. And I think it's really important to small businesses and all businesses, really, that we preserve those pro-growth tax provisions. In a business like mine, in order to be competitive on the world stage and even here in the United States, I have to continue to invest in equipment and people in order to be productive and compete on a world stage. You know, I employ a whole company of people that count on me. My community counts on me to continue to be a successful business here in Minnesota. And besides the employees that work for me, I will tell you that their families are counting on me every bit as much to continue to provide good paying jobs for them.
Yeah. And how that House of Representative race, those remaining House of Representative races for that Ritika Gupta was talking about, will be key on some of those tax policies and whether they get extended or not, as Tracy was talking about. Tracy, a lot of people in the build up to this election have talked to us about seeing Donald Trump as a CEO, seeing him as the best, the kind of best man to manage the American economy out of some of the sticky situations that you've talked about it being in. Do you agree with that? And what would 4 good years economically look like for exactly what you're talking about, supporting your staff, growing your business?
You know, I think 4 good years would look like having an administration who was ready to look at pro-growth policies. You know, one of the things that we think a lot about here in the United States is trying to increase the rate of growth in our economy to something more towards 3%. I'd love to see people in the administration kind of consider the policies that they're going to enact and make sure that they would match up to this idea of getting to a 3% growth rate rather than 1.5% or 2%.
It sounds like you've got some reticence about some of them. Is that tariffs are you worried about particularly then?
I am a little bit worried about trade, but I think that there's an opportunity to have the administration add to their agenda the idea of opening up more markets for U.S. manufacturers and U.S. exporters. The more that we can freely trade with our partners in Europe, our counterparts, and trade back and forth, I think the better off all of our economies will be. So I'd like to see that added to the agenda coming into the new presidency of Donald Trump.
Really interesting. Tracy, thanks so much for your perspective, and we'll definitely drop back in with you on the program over the next 4 years to see how that's going, see how they're meeting up to those standards you set there. Tracy Tapney there, co-owner of Wyoming Machine in Minnesota, also the vice chair of the U.S. Chamber of Commerce Small Business Council. You're with World Business Report on the BBC World Service. Well, Tracy's led us there. Let's turn our attentions outside the shores of the United States then and to some of those European trading partners that she was talking about. One of those sectors that's seen its market value, as Russ Mould was saying, hit as a result of the election is the renewables sector, particularly here in Europe. We've been finding out what a green energy company has been making of the vote.
My name is Don Dekler. I'm the CEO and founder of Swedish energy company Flower. So what we do is we become the balancing part to the increasing share of renewables in our energy systems. Donald Trump being elected into power today means for us certain uncertainties regarding the Inflation Reduction Act, regarding the tariffs, and the U.S. focus on fossil fuels. So all those 3 things have been addressed by Trump previously. We don't know where exactly it's going to take us. But we know that last time he was president, he also withdrew from the Paris Agreement. So I think that's cause for concern.
Russ Mould, there's some of that nervousness coming through again.
Again, that's in the euro. You can see that in the euro currency as well. The dollar's had its best day against this European single currency for 8 years, again, of around 2 cents.
So I heard a little bit about European reaction there. What about the world's second largest economy? In the last couple of minutes, actually, an alert coming down from the Agence France-Presse news agency saying that the Chinese foreign ministry has congratulated President Trump on his victory. Andy Xi, economist based in Shanghai, joining us. Andy, great to have you back on the program here on World Business Report. Andy, we've been waiting this week, haven't we? National People's Council Congress been talking about, I think that sounded like the familiar sound of Andy Xi's line going. I was going to ask Andy, Russ Mould, about China's big meeting this week of the Central kind of Economic Policy Committee. Widely expected that they were going to boost some kind of stimulus measures, talked a lot on the program about the struggles the Chinese economy has had, and they've been waiting, been delaying until after this vote to see what level of stimulus was needed. Sounds like could be quite a big stimulus coming as a result of this.
If President-elect Trump imposes the tariffs he's been talking about, very possibly that would, again, oblige China to move further away from an export-driven economy and one towards one that's focusing more on domestic consumption. That's why they're looking to provide cheaper credit, lower interest rates, make it easy for banks to borrow, make it easy for people to build to buy second or first properties. But really, land reform is one of the big things that economists like Andy will be waiting for from the Chinese authorities to stimulate its domestic economy, just in case those walls close in on its presence overseas through exports.
Andy Xi back with us. Andy, do you agree with that?
To some extent, I think that the stimulus is about 2% of GDP. And it'll be sustained over many years, like 3 to 5 years. Mm-hmm. I think that the purpose is really to stabilize the economy. But some people interpret it as China trying to go for high growth again. I disagree with that. I think that the Chinese government's objective is mainly stability. It's not going back to the go-go days.
And what about this statement from the Chinese government saying they congratulate this Trump victory? Do you think welcome is perhaps the wrong term here? Is this that some of their worst nightmares in trade terms coming back again?
Well, yeah, you know, Trump loves tariffs. You know, everybody knows that. So there will be more tariffs. For China, the good news is that China experienced that 20% tariff from Chinese products during his first term, and Biden kept it. So in a way that China has experience in dealing with that. Let's see where the chips fall and if he wants to up the ante.
Russ, depending on where they fall, does it tell us now that you're either in the US club or the Chinese club economically? Is that going to be a choice in the next
year? You're seeing a little some of that already in, say, the semiconductor industry, where the Dutch company ASM Lithography makes equipment that makes chips. It's already been told it can't sell to China and it can sell to American firms.
Yeah, fascinating, isn't it? We've heard throughout the programme, companies, countries going to be in the middle of this. Going to be so much for us to unpack in the coming weeks. If you miss an episode, check back in World Business Report on the podcast, wherever you get yours from.